Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. This is our 2024 Arizona Cardinals review. We are going to do a little post-mortem autopsy of the Cardinals season, see how we got to this point. Of course, your Arizona Cardinals season is officially over as they failed to make the playoffs through the wild card. Tough break, but you know, it is what it is. We're going to take a look at some key games, some predictions check-ins we did on the Heat Check podcast earlier this year. Some bets were made by BSP Tallman. We got a whole lot more to go and break down for you, so we'll get into that. But very first, before we do, I just want to introduce the whole panel. Of course, I am your host, Chris Patrick, joined by my co-host, Mr. Michael Benjamin and BSP Tallman. Also with us this evening, of course, host of Valley of the Suplex, Nico at It's Neeks, and returning our top contributor, Mr. T Jr. What is going on, boys? Don't everybody jump in at once.
Gentlemen, I got to jump in first because you know what? Football, sometimes it makes me sad. And I think it's because there's so much hype. There's so much talk going into a season. And before you can snap your fingers, your team falls flat after the bye, goes 2-5, and loses its chance to win an NFC West. And the season is over just like that. But I would rather not talk about the Arizona Cardinals with anybody else but you guys, so I'll pass it off to whoever wants to go next. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Yeah, fellas, welcome to 2025. Today's my dog's birthday, so do you guys want to sing happy birthday for my dog?
Which one?
The big fat one.
Big Piper?
Yeah. Yes, it's Piper's second birthday. So you guys made me miss her birthday party to be here, so I hope you guys feel like shit, but ready to reflect on another awesome season of the Arizona Cardinals with you guys.
Hey, she's only 2 years old. She'll forget about it. Don't worry about it.
Oh, she is, doesn't know what she did yesterday.
Yeah, Tom, good thing you said welcome to 2025 because I kind of forgot that we were in 2025. Maybe it's just because the Cardinals stay losing like it's 1995. So I don't know, boys. We'll review this, but once again, here we are. At least we're not Giants fans.
Yeah, I wish this was later. Yeah, I wish this was like a VSP playoff pump up wild card fucking stream. But instead, we're here.
It's Arizona. We don't get those.
I know, dude. And that's like, we'll get into it. But that definitely is part of being an Arizona sports fan. I'm so fucking used to it that I hate it. But yeah, it feels like it's just deja vu. Like we're here again. Yay. Year went by really quick, though. I will say that. But yeah, no, let's get into it.
Yeah, man, the whole year went by quick. The season went by quick. And man, it was interesting. You know, we will kind of break out down the predictions a little bit. But we were pretty close as far as total overall record. Michael Benjamin and BSP Tallman had them finishing 9-8. I had them finishing 8-9. We were all about 50% or so on our predictions for how the games would go down. But there were, I feel like, some key games throughout this season and some turning points where it was really a fork in the road for the Cardinals. They could have gone either way, could have buckled down, made a playoff push, or completely given up. And I don't know. I guess that's up for discussion. But I guess I just kind of want to, while we're talking about key games, I kind of want to start towards the beginning of the season. And I did listen back to our season preview again today to kind of get a taste of how we were feeling back then. And the Washington Commanders, we all unanimously said, like, this is absolutely a win for the Cardinals. It's going to be a blowout win. We're going to be there. We're excited to be there. Tallman was already talking about making the sign. Michael Benjamin made the sign. We took it to the game and got absolutely pounded. A 42-14 loss at home. Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels made the Cardinals look like absolute shit. Man, I mean, guys, I think that was the first game for me where I was kind of like, oh no. What do you guys think about that Commanders one?
Oh, it's embarrassing. We picked the worst game to go to, but because how long did we talk about? You know, we want to see what Kyler Murray looks like, not in the Cliff Kingsbury offense, and then let's see if Cliff can redeem himself. And obviously it was not a Cliff problem. I think early on we figured out we might have a Kyler Murray problem, but man, that was a humbling game for sure. And I couldn't have been more shocked to see that. And I think my biggest takeaway from that game was, because we were there, just all the, I almost called them the Redskins, all the Commanders fans that were there, just this takeover of State Farm Stadium that just continues to happen year in and year out, because we're just mediocre year in and year out. So you're not giving any incentive for the hometown crew to buy tickets and get in the stadium. So it's, you know, we got to figure something out, and this team's got to turn it around, because just seeing that takeover every time I go to a home game, it sucks. Like, I went to the Bears game. I'm walking in, joking with some Bears fans, and the guy's like, "Hey, you know, this is a Bears home game, right?" And he was absolutely right, because it was just an invasion of our opponent's fans, and it's gross. But that was a tough game, very tough game.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Washington game was that, like, as Valley sports fans, we kind of got stabbed twice. Cliff gets a W, and Jaden Daniels gets to, you know, drag his shit all over our face again. That was definitely a tough one. I was at the game the week before, and to kind of piggyback off what Tomlin was saying, like, there was so much Honolulu blue in the stands that, like, you really could have told me that we were in Detroit and I would have believed it, even though it said Arizona on the field. So I do think, like, he's absolutely right. I think, like, we continue to be, like, kind of dog shit. Like, we're going to have dog shit output from our fan base. We don't have, like, story. We're not a storied franchise in the area of, like, fans. Arizona fans are, we know how we are. you know, there are some of us, a very small portion of us, that are very diehard, and then there's a very large portion of us that show up because it's the popular thing to do when it is, and when it's not, they're not around.
Looking at it though, like, the only thing that I'll take, like, some sort of satisfaction in is the first 4 weeks, if you look at it, are all pretty good fucking playoff teams. Like, at that time, being at the Washington game, I can only imagine, like, the fucking heartbreak. And just because I went to the Rams game, which was an absolute fucking blast. I had more fun than I've ever had in any game. So, but yeah, I think that was a hard game to watch. I think I was hoping we'd kick Cliff's ass. Like, I definitely wanted to see that. I was kind of on board with you guys. I think we got cursed because you guys made a fucking sign. Did you guys throw it away? I'm actually really. Did you throw it away? Sign.
No, he kept
you
it.
Have yeah. it. He kept it. Oh, it's amazing. Oh,
right God, here, baby.
No, that's good.
So but we, like, had to walk out of that stadium 1-3 with that sign. We were already putting the nails in the coffin.
Yeah, but to rebound, I think it was the San Francisco game was like the birth of Chad Ryland, correct? Like, that's when he kicked the game-winning field goal, and it was like, oh shit. Like, and that was an awesome win. I think after the Washington game, coming into that week, it was over. I thought, we're fucked. It was like, there's no way. So it was kind of cool to have a little bit of a high, but yeah, I agree. That came Cliff Kingsbury, man. Fuck him.
And let's also remember, our big boy, Trey McBride, only missed one game this year, and it was that Washington Commanders game. Now, a lot of things went wrong for us, but to start the season, that really seemed to be the kick in the ass that the Arizona Cardinals really needed, right? Yes, you lose and you get kind of hammered in Green Bay, but I think we all had notated that down as a loss no matter what. But then you come up against some teams that are struggling. You know, the Chargers hadn't put it together at that point. Tua was just coming back from an injury, and you're looking at a 6-4 record going into the bye, and then we know what happened after that. But I think this is what that team needed early in the season. You know, that Detroit game with a lot of chances to win, and unfortunately the offense couldn't move the ball and you lose by one possession, which honestly, guys, remember it, probably should have been a tie game because Jared Goff had thrown that pick six that was called back because of a play, you know, calling it off, whatever. Unfortunately, that's the NFL, man. That's how things go. You don't get that one bounce and you can't put it together consistently for 60 minutes, you're going to find yourselves losing more than winning. But yeah, that's why I wanted to go to the San Francisco 49ers game in week 18, because I had a real nice feeling that we were going to win that game against Mr. Joshua Dobbs, the starting quarterback to start last season. And it was a good final hurrah, I guess, for the 2024 season after you come up short once again.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. We all thought kind of, I mean, I think everyone thought that the 49ers would be like the consensus division winner for the NFC West. And then obviously they had their struggles and they fell apart. But that's why we got to play basically their B squad at the end of the season, which was, I mean, Kittle only played like part of the first quarter, fucked my parlay. I had him getting 40 yards. He had like 27 and 3 receptions in 5 minutes. But hey, that's just me. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of close games. Like looking back today, like a lot more close games than I think I realized initially. Like, what is it? We won a lot of them. Like we won that 1-point game against the 49ers. That was huge early in the season. So, I mean, we beat the 49ers twice. We had that 1-point win against the Dolphins. So a lot of these games, I mean, kind of close. Like same with the Vikings. We lost in the last minute of that game, basically a 1-point loss, had the lead past the 2-minute warning and just couldn't finish. So I think that's like, there's no such thing as moral victories, but you can still kind of, you know, hang your hat on some of the positives. Looking again, like as we kind of go down the schedule here and look at like some games, it was funny. Tallman initially didn't want to make a prediction wins or losses for the Dolphins game, but he did predict that Tua would have CTE or a concussion, which I mean,
I should have bet on that one.
Got something right. Yeah.
No, that is awful. I don't condone that type of behavior at home, folks.
Tallman saw the odds. Right. He didn't want to put down his money because he was going to have to put down a lot of money in order to cash them back, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, no, that Dolphins game, I'm pretty sure I picked the Dolphins beating us. That's what you're implying, Chris, right?
Yeah, we all picked the Dolphins beat us. So they had high expectations. They did. Tyreek Hill, Raheem Mostert, like...
Well, they were the best offense in the league the season prior. It's like, and then you just, the regression that they had this year is crazy. But I mean, that was an awesome game for us to squeak that out. But Chris, you mentioned all the close games. Guys, we lost 5 games by 1 score. And that was against Buffalo, the Lions. What's the next one? The Vikings, the one you mentioned, that 1-point. And then what was the other one? The Rams most recently. And then I'm missing one other one, but
the dirty Carolina Panthers.
Oh, that's right.
That one possession game.
I already flushed that one out of my memory. So that makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, it just tells you where, you know, if a couple plays would have broken our way. I mean, even in that first Seattle game, it was like we were in that score 16-6. That's not really how it reflected that entire game because we were in it for the majority of it. All we needed was a couple plays. We needed our best players, our star quarterback, to make a play for us. And it just didn't happen. That's just the difference of the season of being 8-9 rather than finishing with the winning record. And just imagine if we spent a little extra money, right? What if we had some more talent on this team? Maybe we pull off a couple of those one-score defeats that we had. You know, it could have been a whole different story, but... I do want to touch on the last game, Mike, because you mentioned you wanted to go to it, that 49ers game. Was there anybody else here that was hoping Kyler Murray just totally sucked ass? No, just me, right? Because we mentioned it before. It was like he's the most decisive athlete, almost, debatably in Valley sports history, because you have all these people now that are on the Kyler Murray team saying, oh, look how he finished. He finished the season great. Look at him. He threw 4 touchdowns. In the last 2 games, he threw for 550 yards and 6 touchdowns. And then what did I say? Whatever. But there's a little bit in me that was just like, man, if he just fell flat on his face, if Josh Dobbs was the better quarterback on the field that day, there just would have been no question about all these haters of Kyler Murray would just been talking loud and clear. But sorry, that's just me being negative.
No, I got to jump in on this, Tom. And it is a good question to pose. But I think what the truth of the matter is, a lot of the Kyler Murray truthers have already come to the light after looking at this graphic right here and what this team did down the stretch. Seeing Kyler Murray fail in a final game against your starting quarterback who was filling in last year, I think would have been even more demoralizing for the fan base than Kyler Murray going out, throwing for over 250 yards and four touchdowns and truly dominating the game through the air on Sunday. But with that being said, I think we're all still on the same page. We know who Kyler Murray is right now, and he's a guy who cannot get it done when you need it most. And that's just a matter of fact. So that's why I wasn't hoping for him to fall flat on Sunday, because I think for morality of Arizona Cardinals fans, we needed a damn win going into the end of the season, especially when all these media outlets were talking about the Arizona Cardinals going 5-2 after the bye, right? That was our predictions that everybody was floating out there. Well, let's at least just flip the numbers and not go 1-6.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, me and you talked about this the other night when we were at the Big Red Rage, but fuck, dude, I'm one of the biggest Kyler truthers that I know. And look, we've got him for another season, and then I think it's kind of time to just do this and start over, especially if there's like no connection between him and Marvin Harrison Jr. like formed over the offseason. Like if they come back and they're still where they left off, like I'm not going to be very, very excited for the next season. I love the idea of Kyler Murray. I love the thought of Kyler Murray. I love Kyler Murray at Oklahoma, but what we've gotten in the NFL has been flashes and glimpses of that Kyler Murray, and then a more inconsistent like shell of that most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, we've all kind of chimed in on the whole Kyler thing a lot. And there we have the Heat Check podcast coming out Thursday where we also, you know, spoiler alert, we talk about Kyler Murray. But while we're here, you know, recapping this season, it went under the microscope of this season. How do you think Kyler did? Like 1 through 10, what would you give him grade wise?
I give him an 8. Honestly, I know. All right. I'm going to be the elephant. I'll be the difference maker here. At what point does it become the receivers? Like a lot of it, when you look at it, is it was a miscommunication in route running. At what point does it become Marv's fault that it's like, hey, dude, you ran the wrong fucking route. Like I'm only 5'10", 5'11". I'm expecting you to be in a spot. If you're not there, like I'm going to do this and be like, what the fuck? But I think looking like statistically, he what had like 70% completion. It was his second highest rushing total. He had 5 rushing touchdowns, over 500 yards rushing. I just don't know who else we get. I think this year across the league, it was a giant step back in quarterbacks. I think quarterback play outside of maybe like your normal six, like Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Mahomes, like you had solid outside of that. It was really just, it was a huge drop. I think the final game was huge. I think it was a lot of fun to watch him. I'm really happy he stayed healthy. That's a big plus for me. 16 games played is big on the stat sheet there, especially coming off such a traumatic injury, being a rushing quarterback. But yeah, I'm kind of on the same page with Nico that like it's next year. Like you need to fucking ball out, dude. Like I saw Lamar Jackson kill it this season. Like I need to see something like that. And if not, we need to figure out how we do this. Cause as of right now, it's a lot of money. Like they're spending a lot of money on it. I hope he gets that connection with Marv. I think he has a beautiful connection with McBride though. That was obviously completely evident this year, but yeah, I'm a big Kyler fan. I have flashbacks of watching like, fuck dude, like Rotten Lindley. And I can't do it. I can't do that again. Like it just like Skelton, can't go back to Skelton type play. I can't do 3-4, like none of that. So we'll see. We'll see.
You don't want John Skelton to make a comeback. Dude, come on.
Max. Remember Max Hall? Remember
yeah. Max Hall, Mountain View.
Yeah, dude.
There is something to be said though Kevin for like Cobb. Oh god, don't even. What about we took him Anderson over trade? Peyton Manning. Ugh. There is something to be said, I think, for like they're great quarterbacks don't grow on trees. And I'm not saying that Kyler is a great quarterback, but Kyler we know what we get with Kyler, and there is a chance to win with Kyler. It's just more of a gamble than it is like a for sure. You know, you got guys like Joe Burrow. You know, Joe Burrow is going to deliver wins. You got, you know, but Kyler isn't one of those guys where you know he's going to deliver wins. You'll get a handful in the season, and then the rest is kind of like rolling the dice. But if we're looking, you know, I don't know. It's a tough spot because, yeah, like who do we go to in free agency? Are we going to pay Sam Darnold? Like what – that would be the type of move it would have to be.
Exactly. And these are the conversations that we've already started having and we're going to continue to have through the entire offseason. And that's just – like Michael Benjamin likes to say, the truth of the matter is there are no other options out there. And yes, is Kyler Murray a good quarterback? Yes, absolutely. You don't win the Heisman Trophy not being a good quarterback and a good football player. However, I will share this Mike Tomlin quote again. Good is the enemy of great. And if these Cardinals team wants to be great, if they want to reach that mountaintop, then they need to make a change because Kyler isn't that dude. It's just they're handcuffed, man. I don't know what you do. This is a terrible quarterback draft. There are no free agents worth a shit. I know there's a lot of people talking. Maybe you go snipe Kirk Cousins from the Falcons. But, I mean, there's a reason he got benched for Michael Penix Jr. You know, it's tough. It's tough. I really don't know where we go from here with Kyler. But looking back at this season as old, Tomlin, did you want to jump in on Kyler one more time?
Oh, yeah. 8 out of 10, really? Were we watching the same?
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you. What the? Tom is okay, going all right. Back.
I mean, sorry, obviously, I was, obvious. No, sorry, I sorry. With well, I thought we were gonna win 5 games. I did not like realistically thinking yeah. like I didn't like the league. What were we projected to win? Like 6-5.
Six and
like
a half.
Six and a half was probably with Vegas. Yeah. All right, so like, no, like I'm happy with it.
So here you go.
Would you let me put it this way? If you were to pay, if we were to go back and say we got the first round pick, we got the overall first overall pick, and we took Caleb Williams, would you rather take Caleb Williams right now or Kyler?
Oh, that's just
that's awful. A big one.
That's awful a good choice. Question.
That's a great question.
That's where we could be. That's we could be playing question. With Caleb Williams, and he, you know, it's the same thing where it's like, or anybody, any of these dudes, would you rather take Cam Ward or Kyler Murray? Would you rather take fucking Shadur Sanders? Do you want Shadur?
No. I'd rather have Shadur over fucking Cam Ward.
This is an awful.
But that's what it is, though. But then it's like, I know it is.
So it was your overall grade at 8 out of 10. So I would do 8 out of 10. If you said, I'd give Kyler Murray an 8 out of 10 for the first half of the season, I'd agree with you. But it's another classic of just the second half collapse that probably isn't all Kyler's fault, but recently in the last 6-7 years, it's a Cardinals problem. So it is. So I was just stewing over your 8 out of 10 rating for his overall season. So sorry.
Yeah, I think in overall growth of Kyler, I think Kyler off the field, him taking more of a leadership role, him being more of, I think overall 8 out of 10, I'm impressed. He had good on the field stuff, ran for over 500 yards.
Did you forget awful decision making. Well, he made.
Did some stupid
some of the
shit.
Worst interceptions ever.
But he also completed 68% of his passes, which is pretty fucking good.
Which were through the air for an average of 4.7 air yardage.
All the training. But still, I think if you looked at his, like, I think it's just the overall development of him, because that was always the big thing was like, well, his attitude, like how he carries himself on the field, on the side. Like, I didn't see any of that. I got to see like him do his whole YouTube thing where he really stepped out of who he normally was, showed the behind this. I'm excited. Like I'm next year. Like if we're here next year, if we could go back and watch this and it's fucking January 7th, 2026, then we can talk. But I think it was good. Mm. It was a good, had they fucking laid an egg in the last game, I think we have a different conversation.
I'm with you, Matt. I mean, truth of the matter, you know, how disappointed we were, especially after that Carolina Panthers loss, when we get booted from being able to make the playoffs. This fan base was throwing things at the wall and putting the blame directly on Kyler Murray and Drew Petzing, to a matter of fact, at that standpoint. But if you really take a step back, yes, Kyler Murray had a better year. I mean, his stats are inflated in regard to touchdown passes based off of the 4 he threw against the San Francisco 49ers. But the matter of fact still is like, see, I think this is where this fan base is still so split because they see the promise. They want to believe. The guy was the number one overall pick. So you think that there is a glimmer of hope for him being the best of the best in there. But you look at the stats, man, and I'm not just talking about interceptions or that kind of stuff. I'm talking about winning games. What is it? November, December, and January, he is 14 and 32 in his six-year career. In 6 years, he hasn't won us a playoff game. This fan base is starving for a winner. And at this point, we are literally just starving to go there. And Kyler Murray had a silver platter of the ability to win the NFC West this year, and he fell flat. And I know it's not just his fault, but I think that was the final nail in the coffin for some people who were on the fence about if Kyler Murray is truly the guy. And yes, you're going to give him the opportunity next year because there's nothing else better than that. And you're praying that he can put it together. But until I start seeing him winning next year in December and January, when it matters and this team is going to the playoffs, I'm going to have a lot of skepticism in regard to how he performs the front half of the season. That's just the matter of fact. And that's where Kyler Murray has painted himself into the corner of his inability to win games for this franchise when it matters. I'm excited for what he did this year. He was healthy. He was able to play the entire season for the first time in his career, which is a positive. But there's still more of the negative, I think, that floats with Kyler Murray in regard to what we think he might be able to do at this point. But hell, fellas, just think about it. If he were to go to somewhere else, he would probably win a Super Bowl with them because that's just how Arizona sports goes.
So let me ask this question to the field here. Do we next year is the same as this year? Let's just say that, hypothetically speaking. We go into we're at the end of the contract year for Kyler. Do we extend him for 2 years because there's not shit in free agency and not shit in the draft in the next draft class? And or do we go down the road of a John Skelton, Max Hall, the backup fiesta, and just watch miserable football? Which one would you guys rather have?
I can't think of 3 years down the road, Nico. I really can't. I think that if we're still rolling out Kyler in 3 years, Jonathan Gannon will have lost his job 2 years into that. Monty Austin-Fort might be right behind him. If he can't actually put together a team, because this whole building through the draft thing, like, it's going to be a slow burn. And then what do you do at that point? Kyler's 30 years old and maybe has had another surgery by then. I mean, that is one of the silver linings, is coming off the injury season and the recovery. Kyler Murray did play all 17 games this season. It's tough, man, because again, like, Kyler's good, and like, if he's the best option, I think you keep rolling him out there and all the while look for better options. But I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, personally.
So we're just not going to have like a good draft pick at least for the next 2 years, is basically what I'm hearing. We're going to be in that mediocrity.
Yeah, about 500.
That Pittsburgh's been in for the past 3 years or whatever, where you can't draft in the top 10 and you can't draft in the bottom 20. So, yeah, that's frustrating.
I don't know, Chris. It was interesting how you said if Kyler Murray's starting in 3 years, then Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austin-Fort will be fired. I think they would still be around because they were able to make it work with Kyler Murray. I think if Kyler Murray doesn't get it done this next year, they're going to go forward with somebody who is their guy, whether it be, you know, a draft pick, development type of guy. You know, they're probably going to bring in, you know, a veteran. It's still all so bad, but we'll see. I mean, yeah, I would say if Kyler Murray is still here in 3 years, then the front office and Jonathan Gannon are still rolling alongside with them. That's how I would feel. I don't know about you guys.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, Matt, you jump in here.
I think we need linemen. I think the big thing, I mean, I love that we have Paris. I know we signed, what the hell is his name from the Bengals? I know we signed somebody who was definitely, but like, and then the penalties, dude. Like, our penalties at the end of the season, like the last three or four games, were ab- abysmal. They're absolutely atrocious. But when you give Kyler time, I know we were playing against like a shitty, the Bees against San Francisco, but like when you give him time, the dude can fucking sling it. Like he can definitely move it. So I don't know. I don't know what they do. I'd like to see him get like a center that's not a dude that didn't really play football at all until like his junior year. I forget what Froholt started playing, but I don't know. There's just a couple of things. The penalties really sucked. I think we kind of had a little bit of a cliff resurgence where it's like the first half of the season, nobody could really figure out the young coordinators who are coming up with this and that. And then the second half of the season, it was just, I felt like they just didn't utilize shit. Like the Washington game, I was looking at Kyler ran one time. I was like, well, fuck, dude. Like that's a big part of his game. Like I get it. But even the Carolina game, like I don't know. It's hard. It's just going to be like this perennial just cycle of like 13th overall pick, 15th overall pick, 15th over. I was like, fuck, dude. Like I agree. But yeah, I don't know. Is the grass greener on the other side? Like, or is the grass spray painted? Like, did they spray paint it green? Or is it really green? Like, I don't know. Like, fuck, I'm excited. I know that when I turn on a Cardinals game, I at least have hope. Like, that's there. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, we have a chance to win. I have friends who are Jets fan. They want to die. Like, they don't have hope, dude. He tells me football ended in September. So, like, it's fun to be excited. But, yeah, you know, there's a reason why they get paid big bucks. There's a reason why GMs do all this shit. Like, I'm just a dude that sits here and talks about sports and I don't fucking know anything. So, but yeah, we'll see. we'll see.
Yeah, Matt. I mean, I'm there with you. I even texted these guys a couple weeks ago and I was like, you know, as bad as things are, I can at least take solace in knowing that there are NFL franchises worse than the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, you see a lot of teams struggling, so it could be worse, but when you have so much talent and so much potential, I think that's where we get caught up. And our market doesn't get a lot of national attention, so we often feel like we are more familiar with this team than anybody else on the outside. And constantly being the underdog, it can be nice, but it can also be frustrating, you know. Just a last few couple things I wanted to look back on with the key games and predictions. When we were looking at week 9 and that Bears game, I don't know what was in the water that day, but VSP Tallman and Michael Benjamin got high on the rookies and the veterans of that team. They really liked Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams, thought that was going to be just a barn burner. Cardinals won that game 29-9 pretty convincingly. And VSP Tallman was so confident that he bet me a round of golf and beer that the Bears would win. So Tallman, I'm ready when you are. We can wait till the summer if you want. Anytime
I told you not to remind him, Mike.
I didn't. Problem.
He remembered?
Not. No, no, right, no. I
cash in now when it's fucking 65. Fuck that.
Jesus Christ.
Chris, well, cash all right. Now. I'll go with you guys this time. How about that?
Let's go. You got it. No problem. I'm a man of my word. We'll follow through with it. But just to expand on,
yeah, you were there, right?
Give you a little reasoning. I mean, they added Keenan Allen. They have DJ Moore. They drafted Odunze. Their defense is good. I just had a feeling that they were going to kick our ass, and it couldn't have been anything from that. So, whatever, you win. Okay,
it's okay.
There's the first one I lost.
It's okay. You bought the hype. Well, let's go to another one that you lost. I'm going to fast forward to week 13
again.
Week 13 against the Vikings, we were poo-pooing Sam Darnold. No way he plays all 17. And Tallman declared by week 13, Nick Mullins will be starting for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, you got lucky, son, because you didn't actually bet anything of monetary value. You kind of just bet it out into the void and into the VSP audience sphere. We asked them to leave a comment and say what the bet should be, but I guess nobody was willing to take that bet. I don't know if that means they agreed with you or what. But yeah, obviously now we're even having that conversation where we're asking, should we look at Sam Darnold over Kyler Murray? So, I mean, it's fair, guys. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I certainly was. That's why me and Mike didn't bet Tallman on that, is because we were like, yeah, it's very plausible.
You know? He's the comeback player of the year. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, without a doubt. I think he has to be.
I mean, props to him.
Yeah, but that was really. Oh, also, I should note that in that Vikings game, we marked it as an easy dub. We said on the podcast, easy dub at least 8 times while we were talking about that game. The Cardinals would win easily. And just to remind you folks, that was the 1-point loss, 23-22. So,
I mean, the Cardinals were up by 14 plus points in that game going into the fourth quarter, I think. So it should have been easy. But hey, that's how the second half went, Chris.
Hey, you know, it's how the cookie crumbles. But let's move on. Let's look at some individual performances from throughout the season. Obviously, we had heavy focus on Kyler Murray there for a little bit. But while we're talking about the offensive side of the ball, for you guys, and I kind of just want to go around and see, have everyone kind of pick one. So let's just go down the list here. I'll go last. We'll finish back with me. But Mike, who was your offensive standout this year?
Guys, you know who my offensive standout has to be. It's the wide receiver number 2, Michael Wilson, who just won me an Arizona Cardinals fresh, brand new $130 jersey. Because, Tomlin, I ain't cheaping out on it, my brother. We ain't getting that foo-foo stuff.
Only from China orders Timu. Over here.
No, 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 no. That's not the answer. But I did like Michael Wilson. He had a healthy season, guys. He only missed the last game because there's nothing really to prove at that point. If we're in contention for a playoff spot, he's probably playing. Obviously, the offense in regard to the passing game did fall flat as a whole this year. But I got to give some flowers to Michael Wilson. I think he was aggressive, going up for those pinpoint jump balls as he has been within his first 2 years of this year. You know, he did his part, but we know where the ball's going to go. It's a three-headed monster for this offense. So I think he played some complimentary football on the other side of Marvin Harrison Jr. this year. But that also doesn't mean the Arizona Cardinals aren't going to go out and look to bring in probably another veteran to possibly compete with Michael Wilson at the number 2. But I want to give him his flowers, man. When you win me a bet, you get some damn flowers.
There you go. Well, Tomlin, what's your assessment? Who was your standout player of the year?
Yeah, so did you really just pick Michael Wilson?
You're damn right I did.
I think we all know exactly who the true offensive standout was this year, who blossomed into a superstar, but I'm not going to pick him. I'm going to pick the running back that we just extended, James Conner. He did deal with a little bit of some injuries there towards the end, but, I mean, James Conner was the identity of this offense for several weeks in a row, where if James Conner was getting over 100 yards rushing, we were winning that game. So he just proved to me again why he's my favorite Arizona Cardinals player right now, because he is just a monster. He's a mean motherfucker, and I'm glad that they extended him, and we have our core, our running back, or I think the best offensive player aside from maybe our aspiring tight end, but our best offensive player is James Conner, and he's just so fun to watch. So yeah, that's my standout, James Conner again.
Fuck, I'll go. Screw it. Yep. Mine's Zay Jones. With that fucking stellar 8 receptions.
Zay Jones.
I remember being
you so just excited. Put that on there to fuck with me.
I know, exactly. I was like, why the fuck you even do that? That's like a stat line for like a good game for Stephon Diggs. Man, I think obviously like VSP Tallman, it's weird saying that, was saying like the obvious choice is definitely Trey McBride. And I'm going to steal it. I'm going to jump on it because it's the easy one to pick. Man, who would have thought? I mean, I knew he was good coming out. I was really excited when we drafted him. I was like, cool, we got a decent receiving tight end. Holy shit. Like, I know that a tight end's like a quarterback's best friend, and I'm sure that's Kyler's best friend because it definitely made him look a lot better. Like Mike was saying, the completion percentage, it's definitely for the 4-yard dump outs to Trey McBride where he's leaping over to people, Sparta kicking him in the head. But yeah, I think Trey McBride, dude, it just definitely kind of put us on the map a little bit to where people like, I know we don't really get talked about a lot, but it's hard to not talk about that. It's 100 reception plus tight end, 1100 yards. Like, I wish he got more touchdowns. That kind of sucked. I know he got some negative publicity towards the end of the season, having so many catches and not getting a touchdown. But yeah, I think I think we found a really, really, really good tight end. I hope we do not do the normal Arizona thing where we let really good talent go and we sign him and we sign him for a lot of fuck. Yeah, dude, it's such an amazing play. But no, I do. Trey, he's fun, dude. And he plays angry. He's super aggressive. He's a chippy motherfucker. He's always screaming after the plays. Like, he just brings a certain, him and James Conner, it's just two dogs. Like, so that'd be the 1A, 1B. But I'm going to give it to Trey McBride. Just the outstanding season, Pro Bowl nods. Like, it's cool to see that us actually have a fucking tight end for once.
Yeah, I think the Trey McBride and James Conner are the easy answers to this question. I'm going to go, just so we're all a little different here, I'm going to go with Marvin Harrison. Just because this is a fantastic rookie year. Especially for as much scrutiny as we all like looked at the relationship with him and Kyler and the timing being off, and for him to come out with damn near 1,000 yards and 8 tuts, like, that's, I think that all signs are pointing to, yes, this is great company to be with. But all three of the, well, two of these guys will have their jersey retired by the franchise. And hopefully Marvin Harrison can join that. But anytime you're mentioned in the same breath as Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, you're doing something right. And whether it be Kyler throwing him the ball of the future, whoever it is, I think we are in for it as Cardinals fans, and for a real treat to watch Marvin Harrison develop.
No, I have Nico to piggyback off of that. Like, I absolutely agree. I mean, under different circumstances, I think, and obviously you could play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game, but I think Marvin Harrison Jr. was already ready and talented enough to have a much bigger season. You know, it is what it is, but with what he was given to work with, to be able to still put up numbers like that, to be amongst the conversation with guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, I mean, as long as Marvin Harrison Jr. is an Arizona Cardinal, he is going to be compared to Larry Fitzgerald. And probably his father too, but more so Larry Fitzgerald here in the Valley. But no, great season for him. Obviously, Trey McBride is probably, and James Conner, easily the standout player. But like Nico, for the sake of mixing it up and you know, giving everyone some flowers, this might be a little bit of a dark horse, guys. I'm going with the kicker, Chad Ryland. Buddy was 28 to 32 field goals, 26 to 27 on the extra point. He was 4 for 4 from 50 plus yards, and all four of his misses were from the 40 to 49 yard range. So his misses were the long ones. He did make the 50. It's kind of weird. You can make the 50 plus, but you can't make the 40 plus. I mean, I'm not a kicker. I couldn't kick a 40 yard field goal, so I'm not going to be talking shit. But yeah, Chad Ryland kind of put our minds at ease to where we don't need Matt Prater anymore. He's not going to be on the team next year. And yeah, perfect example, the game winner against Miami. Granted, this is what, a 25 yard field goal here, but hey, clutch time, 1 second left on the clock, do or die. We saw what happened.
We do not own the rights to this video.
We do not. But hey, Chris, I think you make a great point, right? Matt Prater's getting up there. He has been one of the best in the league for so long, but to give this kid an opportunity and him step in and have what, 3 straight game-winning field goals? Like, it's just awesome. And it led to the promise that we were seeing from this Arizona Cardinals team to start this season, which was really something that the Valley sorely needed after the way that the Arizona Diamondbacks kind of faltered, didn't make the playoffs, and how the Suns have been doing. But we're not going to talk about that, guys. But yeah, you know what is crazy to me, though? You know, obviously, Trey McBride, he's the guy. We all know this. But Tallman must hate Michael Wilson so damn much to the point that he has to make a comment every time I bring him up, when he's a guy that you need to be successful for this team to be successful. Tallman, it's time to switch narratives in 2025, okay? I want you to hop on the Michael Wilson bandwagon. Come over. There's plenty of room, my brother.
You know, he played 16 games, Tallman. He played all. Okay, he played 16 games.
I know. I watched. You mean – oh, it's all 16. Oh, I got you. You got me there. I watched all 17 games. No, it's just, come on. It's just a running joke. I like to talk some shit about Michael Wilson, but I will say, Mike, if you're going to pick a Michael Wilson jersey, just know now the way my phone's set up and programmed, in all my apps, the shopping cart, it won't allow me to add it to my shopping cart. So I won't be able to purchase a Michael Wilson jersey just because it's programmed to not let me. So
make sure you choose it. You also can't buy an MHJ jersey too. So I still got some work to do.
That's an MHJ issue, not a me issue.
So the Wilson jersey thing is a you issue.
Yes, it is. Okay. But I know what jersey you're going to get.
You tell me. Apparently, you know which one I'm getting. What am I getting?
He's going to get a Trey McBride jersey. We all know it.
Yeah, he probably should.
Definitely get a Trey.
I don't think McBride's going anywhere soon. I mean, that's the tough part for me buying jerseys is like how quickly turnover can happen on NFL rosters. I feel like more than any other sport next to maybe, actually, I don't know. I guess all sports have some level of turnover, but football doesn't often have those cornerstone guys outside of a quarterback. So I think Trey McBride being in his third season, he just finished his third season, young guy, you're going to lock him up. I mean, did he break the franchise record for most receptions by any player or by a tight end?
I think it was tight end. Because I think D-Hop holds the record with what?
115?
14,
114.
Oh, yeah. So he was close.
Yeah, he was close. Larry was 109.
109. And he was close to the all-time tight end record, which do you guys know who holds that? Most receptions by a tight end all-time in a season?
Tony Gonzalez?
No. The one-time Arizona Cardinal Zach Ertz with 116 catches. So that would have been awesome to see. I was really crossing my fingers that they were just going to be force feeding him the ball down the stretch of that game.
Yeah. No, I love Trey McBride. I'm very excited for him. I mean, Michael Wilson's a young guy too, Tallman. For all we know, he could be around for a long time too. So get used to seeing his face around here catching passes on Sunday.
You can get any jersey you want, Mike. I won't judge you if you want to get a Michael Wilson jersey. It's okay.
You're damn right. No, the bet was I buy you a Michael Wilson jersey and you have to wear it every game next year. So
that's right.
Just get ready. I'll get your measurements later.
Well, that was the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, some good performances despite the tough season. The defense, we had very, very low expectations for this Arizona Cardinals defense going into this campaign. And boy, did they blow our expectations out of the water. Now, they weren't world beaters. They weren't absolutely shutting down every single team we played, but doing much, much better than we thought. And honestly, kept us in a lot of these games. I think the overall record would have been much different had the defense not stepped up the way it did. So, of course, we have to give these guys some flowers too. Same style. Let's start with Mike, go to Cody. I mean, BSP Tallman, then Mr. T Jr., then Nico, and we'll pick our defensive standout of the year. So, Michael Benjamin, I guess I'll give you the benefit of going first again. Who are you taking?
I mean, gentlemen, it goes back to it. I mean, the two guys who made the biggest difference made the Pro Bowl, right? They're probably going to be all pro players if you really talk about it. But I'm going to stay in the secondary. I got to go with the guy who made a big, big leap this year and some big, big plays this season. It's defensive back Garrett Williams, man. Awesome second year. 9 passes defended. That's amazing. 2 interceptions. Sean Murphy Bunting led the team in interceptions. That was kind of a narrative, unfortunately, with this defense, is they didn't turn the ball over or get takeaways that much. But when they needed to hold up, they played bend, don't break football. And I think Garrett Williams is taking that step to become the next great lockdown corner in this league. And he really, really stepped his game up this year with, you know, the opportunity that was handed to him. That's one thing that you can talk about with this coaching staff under Jonathan Gannon is they want to get their young guys involved and see what they can do, especially when you invest capital, lots of draft picks into young guys. These guys got to produce. So I loved what Garrett Williams did. I also loved what Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, the Rabbit, did as well, you know, shoring up that safety position in the future, even though I know we got Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson locked up for the future, but never hurts to have more guys. But yeah, I'm going Garrett Williams, man. This was an easy pick for me.
There you go, Mike. I wanted to pick Kaiser White here, but I'm going to dig a little deeper here. I'm going to pick Mac Wilson Sr. I mean, it's poor guy got his lights turned off on that one on that one game. But man, I mean, talk about a guy that when he got signed in the offseason, that's one of those players where you go, who the hell is that? You know, doesn't get the juices flowing very much, but he had a major impact this season on this defense. He absolutely did. Throw you some stats. Homie got 44 solo tackles, 3 sacks, 4 tackles for a loss. But just the pressure that he was adding, that you saw him flying around the field, and he was a great complement to Kaiser White, as well as when they utilized Buda Baker off the edge as well. So I liked what I saw out of Mac Wilson Sr., and we did sign him to a 3-year contract, and so he's not going anywhere. No, you're supposed to go.
Oh, I thought that was going. My bad. Well, you stole mine, so I feel fucking stupid.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not going to go the easy one because I feel like I did that going with Trey McBride, because I feel like everyone would say Buda Baker, being how that's all anybody talks about with the Cardinals defense. But I'm going to go with Sean Murphy Bunting. I know that that's kind of a weird – for me, I know a lot of people after he left Tampa Bay were like, oh, he's immature, he's young, blah, blah, blah. I think he played great. I think he was a great opposite side. I think he – I just – for me, after Patrick Peterson left, it was, like, hard to get excited about, like, any corner. I really like him. I know he's super young. He played really well with Tampa, played really well with us, had a great – I think he had an interception in the last game, if I remember correctly. I feel like he did. But yeah, I'm excited about, you know, that. I was going to say Buda Baker, obviously. That's the easy one. But yeah, I think Sean Murphy Bunting, I think we have a couple good corners. I think Garrett Williams is a great pick for that as well. Jalen Thompson had a quiet season. I didn't even notice he had that many tackles. So that's pretty good to see. We have a lot of young linebackers too, dude. So it could have been a number of people. You could have picked anybody looking at these stats at the end of the season with how much production, with the pressure that was, you know, Mac Wilson did apply before he got knocked out and woke up 3 days later. But yeah, I'm excited. I know we had really low expectations. I know we didn't think we were going to have really any sort of pressure, any sort of pass rush. I know we talked shit about Dennis Gardeck, which is not fair to him. He's a great player, great guy, but just not a great, great pass rusher. So good stats to see. I know they kept us in a lot of the games. I'm going to go Sean Murphy Bunting. I hope we keep him. I hope he stays. I'm not sure what his contract is. Got to look that up, but we'll go with him.
Yeah, he's locked up. You're not going to talk about the fight?
The fight? That sucks. I mean, that's the chip. But I like Jennings, the chippiness. I like the chip, which sucks because he was what? 60 yards from his 1,000-yard season or whatever.
No, he's like 40.
He was 25 yards away.
Was he that?
Because Josh Dobbs was feeding him in that.
Yeah, because Sean Murphy was the second fight. Because didn't he get in the first little fight? Where
did he go out? Starling Thomas.
I think it was. And then they got real chippy.
The next play.
The very next play, and they were like, "Well, the second guy always gets." Obviously, they shouldn't have got thrown out for what they did, but I like that, dude. I like the chippiness. I like the young. We're not like the Shady Acres come to retire here. Like, it feels good. I'm excited for our defense, which is weird to say because I was not feeling like that 17 weeks ago.
Yeah, so I guess that leaves it down for me. I'm a Kaiser White stan, so that's the easy pick for me. He's my favorite player on the defense outside of Buda Baker, but I'm gonna curve off here. Give me Zaven Collins. This is a big year for him, I feel like. The man in the hat performed well. The 5 sacks, watching fucking Zach Allen do his thing in Denver kind of breaks my heart. So like the fact that like we're kind of making up for it a little bit with Zaven Collins is nice. It was one of those draft picks that we made where I was very unsure in the beginning. And I'm very glad to be proven right. So, I think Matt kind of said it too. Like it really could be any one of these dudes on here. Jalen Thompson had a fantastic season. I was tugging back and forth between Collins and Thompson. Give me Zaven Collins.
Nico, you took the guy I was going to take. Now, I, of course, I'm going last. You took Zaven Collins. So I guess this leaves me the easy decision of taking Buda Baker. Man, did I just get that lucky? I mean, obviously, it's Buda Baker. 164 total tackles. He was cleaning up messes left and right. 10 tackles for a loss, even 2 sacks coming out of the backfield. Played all 17 games as well, and he re-signed to come back with the Arizona Cardinals. Buda Baker is the heartbeat of the defense. Might be the heartbeat of this entire team, right up there with James Conner. But, man, hats off to Buda Baker. I'm glad that the Cardinals were able to keep him, and hopefully he finishes the rest of his career here. I really don't see why not, but that's my dude right there.
Yeah, we were playing nice in the sandbox, Chris. So everybody let you have Baker at the end.
Thank you. Thank you. Very, very generous. So, guys, I know I want to take a little bit of a step back. We're looking at a lot of stats and numbers and players and stuff, but there are a couple stories that kind of started off season, kind of came into the season. And there's one in particular that kind of still gets my blood boiling a little bit, gets me a little hot. And in doing some research last night, I did get a little more information that made me even a little bit more annoyed. And, you know, it's been a constant narrative where I don't think Cardinals fans like Michael Bidwell and his ownership very much. I don't think they like how he's really run this team. Throughout this season, I saw several times where people were, you know, pleading for Michael Bidwell to sell the team. He'll never do that, and we know that. But there was a big change at State Farm Stadium this season. They completely gutted one end zone and set up these casitas, some kind of fancy fan suites. It cost, depending on the game, it'll cost you $30,000 to $50,000. And you can have, I think I saw 20 or 25 people in there. And if you want extra tickets, it's $1,000 per ticket up to like 35 people or something like that. So obviously this is face value. It's a cash grab. It's appealing more to the wealthy clientele, which a lot of the times will end up being, you know, I know businesses will get these as well, obviously, but a lot of the times the game we were at with the Commanders, they were a lot of like out of town fans too, you know, people coming in for that experience. So a little bit annoying, taken away from the common man in the lower bowl. But I don't know if you guys knew this. I'm going to read some information I found here. I think it was pulled from an article, and I apologize whoever typed this beautiful summary up. I couldn't find the actual article, just snippets of it on X. But anyway, it says that there's an agreement among NFL teams that calls for 34% of each team's ticket revenue to go towards a general pool to be shared equally. The result is 66% of $18.7 billion in 2022 NFL revenue was distributed equal allotment to the 32 teams. A little broken English there, but you get the point. But there was still a wide chasm in team values, largely due to stadiums and teams not. And this is the kicker right here, which I think is why Bidwell put in the casitas. Teams do not share revenue from luxury suites, on-site restaurants, merchandise, stores, sponsorships, or non-NFL events at their stadium. So it doesn't take a very smart person to put two and two together and see that Bidwell didn't want to share. Bidwell doesn't want to play nice in the sandbox. He's a greedy little bitch who doesn't want to invest in his team and only wants to line his pockets. I need to calm down. I'm going to let you guys take it, but fuck Michael Bidwell.
Ooh, me next.
Yo.
Go for it, man. Go for it.
Okay.
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good, Tomlin. Go for it.
I was just going to say, have you – those bleachers that were there before, we sat there before, they kind of sucked. So I'm just kidding.
Shut your fucking
but
mouth.
But it was a dude. Ticket in the lower
we
bowl.
We could sit Tom. There.
But
we
you sat there.
Yeah, I could have afford those fucking tickets. Sit in these casitas.
All right. I'm just kidding. Relax.
I don't even know a dick rich enough to suck to get in these casitas. Are you fucking kidding me?
True.
Like, what a fucking joke that Bidwell is as an owner. And a fucking and a human honestly, this dude pisses me off so much with everything that you read from the fucking team reports, where he's telling female employees that they can't walk in the same stairwell as the male employees, and that they can't be near the football players, and like all the shit that you fuck Michael Bidwell with the longest dick and forever, and sell the goddamn team because we deserve better as a fucking state. As a football state, that it, yes, we did not exist as a football state until Bidwell brought the Cardinals here. but we have fucking evolved. We have gotten better, and we've outgrown this shitty fucking piece of shit owner. I am so sick of it, and I am personally tired of giving my fucking money straight to Michael Bidwell. But I'm a mark, and I'm a fucking pussy, so I'll give him my money every single time. Sorry, I'm done.
The staircase thing made me like him a lot.
Wait, Tallman, you're telling me you don't want to have the opportunity to sit like this at a Cardinals game?
Oh, yeah.
I miss it. I love those seats.
No, I'm saying like that. I was making a joke about the like folding chairs.
Oh, yeah, they were folding chairs. But yeah, you're right in front on the action, man.
Well, I mean, they had to be folding chairs because everything had to break down to roll out the field, obviously. But that was
so they could have monster trucks on.
I was going to say, they got fucking monster trucks to drive, dude.
Jesus Christ. Sunday.
Sorry.
Well, now it makes sense, though, if you think about it. They have the casino book there thing, right? Like that.
Was it like a parking lot?
It's on the Great Lawn. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but it's on the property. I think from what Chris had said, they don't have to share any of that revenue.
No.
They're making a split for, and I'm sure they have a restaurant there and a bar and whatever the fuck. So that's all money he's pocketing. So he's not sharing any of that money. So. No, hearing that, it's gross. But I mean, at the end of the day, man, it's a business. It's a business. And when it comes down to it, it's like, how much money can I make? I mean, I know it's for the Bidwells, it's kind of a more mom and pop when you look at the figures opposed to some of the other teams and the facilities and whatnot, I think. But going to a game this year was the first time that it's ever been like a little more lively. I know they added like the DJ, they did some shit with the lights. Like, it's a little different. It's not the same old like my dad with the bow tie, Mr. Bidwell. Like, I don't give a fuck about your dad, dude. I don't give a fuck about you either and your stupid fucking shoes that you wear with no socks and your dress suit. Fuck you, dude. Yeah, I think he's a piece of shit, but at the end of the day, like, I understand it. It's a business. You need to make money, because if you don't make money, you run out of business. So I can't knock him for that. He's smart for making the casita things. Like, even going to a game, dude, like, they're not watching the fucking game. None of those people work. So we went to the Rams game when I went with my wife. Like, I remember looking down there and being like, they're like chatting. It was like two ladies drinking wine like 30 feet the fuck away from everything at a table. It's like, go to Postino's. What the fuck are you doing? Like, I don't get it, but I get the reasoning for it. I think it could have been better. I think it could have been something a little bit more priced fairly, where it's not fucking 30 grand, but yeah, fuck Bidwell, dude. He's a piece of shit.
I mean, that's the thing, Matt. Like, if there are people out there that are willing to pay $30,000, which there are clearly, then he's gonna market like that. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if the price goes up next season. And I get what you're saying, and I agree. Obviously, you run a business to make money. You want to make as much as possible. But when you're already, you know, making billions and you don't have a product without fans, you end up turning it. If you mismanage your team well enough, you end up being the Oakland Athletics with your attendance being less than 10,000. I know it's, you know, baseball and football isn't a one-for-one comparison. Obviously, there's only, what, seven, eight home games in a season. So fans like Nico, like myself, as much as we hate Bidwell, as much as we're going to sit here and dog on him, I'm still going to try and go to at least one game a season because I want to see my team. Because at the end of the day, you know, these players, they didn't choose to play for Bidwell. I mean, obviously, you know, some of them did, but you know, the ones that are drafted, and it's a business for them as well. You know, you might not love the owner, but you play for the team that gives you the highest contract. So I know, Matt, there's a lot of moving parts, but I just think it's a little bit disgusting and a little bit underhanded. I mean, Mike, I haven't heard you chime in on this yet. I'm curious what you think.
Oh, I don't want to speak too ill because I'm just hoping that I can, you know, fly in one of his private planes sometime in the future, you know. And no, guys, I mean, we know how we truly feel about it. I think the biggest thing is, you know, when all of these reports started coming out from each of the teams, it truly put a light on how this operation has been. And it's been towards the very bottom of the NFL. Now, I think this past season was the second year that they did the reporting and we started to do some upticks, which I think is a positive, right? Like, you can only go up from being in the bottom of the basement. But yeah, I think this offseason is going to be a real telltale sign in regard to if Michael Bidwell is truly investing into this team to be a competitive team for years to come. With our amount of cap space, what are we at? $89, $95 million. You know, how much of that is Monty Osifort really going to be able to spend? Instead of him saying, hey, get all your capital through the draft and force these young guys to be difference makers. No, you guys, you know, on the Heat Check podcast that's coming out on Thursday, we already talked about how I feel, what needs to be done to give, I think, positive outlook for this team as a whole is, you know, they got to look at making a blockbuster trade for somebody on the defensive line. They got to flush that position with new talent, somebody and guys who are proven commodities into this league. So I think if Monty Osifort is given the green light for that, it at least shows some kind of good faith that Michael Bidwell is buying into this product and wanting to deliver us a winner. But the same thing as how it goes with Kyler Murray, guys. Until you show it, until you prove it, this is what you are. And right now, that is still what Michael Bidwell is. He's a guy who's out for the bunny. He doesn't care about truly bringing a winner to the Valley. Which is sad. It sucks. But that's where we live right now.
Yeah, but you can't expect it to be any different if he sold it. I mean, look at the NFL as an overall. It's all about the money. It's all about getting all these streaming services to exclusively show these games because they're paying out the ass to the NFL. It's about them towards the end of the season spreading games on a Saturday and Sunday, about them creating a Black Friday football game. Like, that's all they care about is money. And so, like, do you think you're going to get any pity from a billionaire? They're all the same. If this billionaire sells it to another billionaire, it doesn't matter. So it's, but I mean, I get what you guys are saying, though. I mean, it's a little disgusting. I'm also just jealous that I'll probably never get to sit there, but we can always dream, right?
Oh, we're gonna dream. No, we're gonna pull together our money to buy a casita one day.
Let's just get 30 people together. Yeah,
the same way that we still have to do it for
the pool
at Chase Field. We're gonna get it done.
That's more doable, though.
The pool or the casita?
The pool is more doable.
The pool is more doable.
Yeah, much more durable.
Hey, yes. maybe VSP will get a kind donor that wants to bring all his favorite hosts of his favorite podcast out to the casita. Dreaming's free, right, Tom? And you always tell me that. But you're right.
Sure is.
You know, all the NFL owners, to some extent, are greedy. And I'm sure, I know for a fact, actually, that there are other fan bases having this similar conversation. I mean, I know the Panthers owner is also a piece of shit. But what I was going to say is it is true that the NFL as a whole, not just the owners, like even the NFL is like the governing body or whatever, like the way the games are so segmented out and you have to have different streaming services and this and that. The Cardinals, we had a primetime game. You guys know where we watched that game?
Was it ESPN Plus?
Yeah. ESPN Plus. Was I able to watch that game? No. I was not able to watch that game.
We did have another one though. We got flexed to that Saturday night game when we played the Rams.
That's right.
But obviously we fell flat. We lost to the Carolina Panthers. The NFL had put, you know, a lot of faith into us that we were going to be something at that point. But what's new?
I hope they learned their lesson. Well, fellas, I think we're starting to wind down here. One more thing I wanted to do, and then we can kind of chit-chat the odds and ends until we're ready to bounce out of here. But we did our standouts. We know who the contenders are. Now it's time for us to choose a team MVP. Offense, defense, coaching, mascot, ball boy, concession stand, whoever on this entire staff was the most valuable person, player, puppy, you name it. Let's start from the bottom of our little chart here and work our way up. So Nico Bellic, that gives you the floor first.
So you said concession stand. I'd like to nominate the sweet lady who made my micheladas in week three. That was sweet. She's the MVP. They tore me on a very long michelada spree. Muy delicioso. Thank you. No, I'm going to go with, it's honestly, it's between two, maybe three people, but I got to go, Buda Baker. I think he had a just, I think we start to take it for granted because the Cardinals are kind of like safety you, it feels like, you know, like where we just like, that's one position that we don't seem to have any issue finding talent. We'll drop one safety and we'll all be like, how the fuck could we get rid of Tyrann Mathieu? And then we'll draft fucking, you know, Buda Baker, and Buda Baker will be a, you know, long stead for a long time. So I'm going to go Buda, but I'll leave the floor out for the rest of you guys.
I'm going to pick an easy one. My MVP is going to be James Conner. I think James Conner, you heard Jonathan Gannon say it. I heard it several times from commentators say, if he was going to pick a player to coach the team for the day, it's James Conner. Like, that guy is just his mentality, his tone. When we use him and utilize him correctly, he's such a problem for defenses. It's hard to game plan against him because the dude's going to get 6 yards. He seems to always fall forward no matter what. He just brings, like, I think he kind of brings the better out of us when we don't really have much of an attitude. Like, he has that attitude. He kind of is just like a smash mouth north south runner, but he can cut. He is elusive. Like, I think he just brings such a different aspect and different component to our offense. And when we don't have him, it's super clear. We're just kind of lost. It's kind of like the Trey McBride show. It's let's throw to Trey McBride. It's when we have him and we can hand it off comfortably and we know we're going to get yards. It's just, it's hard to pick anybody else for me. It sucks that we didn't have him. He tweaked his knee. I know he was on IR. But he was mostly healthy, so I'm gonna take James Conner. I think without him, we're not even sniffing 5 games.
Nice, nice. All right, I'll go. I'm gonna take my team MVP. It's gonna be Steve Keim because he drafted Trey McBride. So you guys remember when he drafted Trey McBride with the second round pick, and we were like, what the fuck? But boy, he's just blossomed right before our very own eyes. I mean, he is the top bright spot of this season, how he's emerged as a bona fide top three tight end in the league. There's no doubt about it. He bursted out onto the scene this season. I mean, he trademarked the Trey hurdle. I mean, this guy was Kyler Murray's safety blanket all year long. Granted, it did take him a little while to get into the end zone. I know he set a little record there with the most receptions without a touchdown, but he was able to cash in a little bit towards the end. But I mean, he's going to be a top guy in the league at the tight end position year in and year out. That is for sure. My team MVP, Trey McBride.
Guys, this one was so hard because I want to lean exactly where Tallman is going. I mean, what an absolutely stellar season. Trey McBride finishes fourth overall in receptions in the NFL. I mean, the guy just absolutely put himself on the map, and you have to give him his flowers. But I think one thing for me when it comes to Trey McBride is I think I kind of expected him to have a really big year, even with Marvin Harrison Jr. joining the fold. Because I think somebody was going to have to lead by example. And Trey McBride has shown in his young career that he's ready and willing to do that. And he's completely invested. But I will say, my guy, my team MVP, it has to be Buda Baker. And by extension, I'm going to also nod co-MVP defensive coordinator Nick Rallis, guys. How about that? I mean, the Arizona Cardinals, who we thought were going to be absolute bottom feeders in defensive stats this entire year, they finished 14th in passing, 15 in points per game as well. So top half of the league. With all of the injuries this team had to deal with on the defensive line and with the weapons that weren't provided to him, this team had to be led by somebody, and the perfect person to do it was Buda Baker, who finishes second in the league in solo tackles with 95, second in total tackles with 146. The man is everywhere. When he is in coverage, people don't want to throw to him. That's why he doesn't get interceptions. They put him all over the box. 10 tackles for loss, 2 sacks as well. I mean, Buda Baker did it all in year 7, I believe, as well. So when Kyler Murray doesn't prove it in year 6, Buda Baker is expanding his game and really just absolutely hammering home that he is the best safety in the NFL. So, gentlemen, I'm going with Buda Baker as my team MVP this year. I don't think anybody deserves it more than Buda.
Guys, I can't really add too much more to what you already said. I think Matt makes a compelling argument for James Conner. Easily the MVP of the offensive side. You know, maybe co-MVP with Trey McBride for the offensive player. But overall, Mike, Nico, you nailed it. It's Buda Baker. He is the Arizona Cardinals. And to be up there stats-wise in the entire league is just adds to it. The amount of tackles he got, and for a safety, I mean, Mike, you said it, you know, it's not the greatest stat because that means that they're getting balls, you know, deep into our territory to where Buda Baker's coming in for the tackle, or, you know, they're at least making gains most of the time. But hey, that's his job. His job is to clean up messes, and he did his job well. So three for five of us. So consensus team MVP will be safety Buda Baker, and he's coming back. So I expect another big season from him next year.
Wait, Chris, we got another one that we got to throw into our guy, Low Tone Capone. He's saying his MVP is Kyle Brandt for doing all he could in attempting to speak a winning season into existence. I think that was a fun ride for us. You know, Kyle Brandt really championing the Arizona Cardinals this year. And it almost came to fruition, but yeah, had to shout out Kyle Brandt, Low Tone Capone. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, you know, it's a team effort. There's, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can go, and the fans obviously play a big part in that too. The fans that didn't sell their tickets, that went to the games, appreciate them. Fellas, I mean, that was the 2024-2025 Arizona Cardinals season in a nutshell. You know, pretty much what we expected, honestly. I mean, maybe not the path to get there, but record-wise, kind of what we expected. I think we were all hoping they would get in through the wild card, especially once we got to the midseason point, saw that the Rams might not be all they were chalked up to be. The 49ers were wounded. There was a path for us, but the Cardinals couldn't take advantage. I think the bye week ended up being a detriment to them. They came out, dropped 3 straight after that, and never really found their footing. It's tough. But, you know, we got to look forward. We did our looking back. But, fellas, before we get out of here, is there anything else you guys want to say about the Arizona Cardinals season or anything that's on your mind?
Super Bowl win. I want a Super Bowl so bad. Nah, I'm happy with it. I think we were really drinking the Kool-Aid at the beginning of the season and really expecting us to do a lot better as Cardinal fans. I know as the NFL and professional analysts and shit like that didn't really have us winning a lot. So I think we exceeded a lot of people's expectations. We exceeded obviously Vegas's 6.5 prediction for win loss over under. But all in all, like I'm excited. It's we won 4 more games than we did last year. So it's Rome wasn't built in a day. I know we want to wake up tomorrow and there be a fucking giant, beautiful football team. It's going to take time, guys. I know that's hard. I think we have a lot to look at with how we draft, how we do our offseason. Do they give Nomni, like, does he get an empty check to kind of just rock and roll and really pull in some people? Are free agents going to really want to come now that they see that there's kind of a culture and we're not this shitty complete rebuild? But all in all, I'm happy with it. I wish we were playing more. It sucks that we're doing the end of the season now, but I mean, it could be way worse, guys.
Yeah, so I think for me, it's, I'm a little more doom and gloom than it sounds like Matt is. I don't know. I try to look at it optimistically. I try to, like, you know, I thought if we were going to put it together, we would really start to put it together this year. And I thought that it would look differently than what it did, period. So even though I had lofty expectations with 10 wins, like, we, you know, we couldn't even get fucking 9. So, you know, like, I, I don't know. It is a step in the right direction though, and I do have to remember that. I'm also very, very just kind of football put a stank taste in my mouth after that college football final, or that college football semifinal. I've had a hard time digesting any football games after that. So I don't know. Yeah, optimistic for sure, I guess, but very, very pessimistic as well. I do want to congratulate Chad Ryland on being a part of a championship team this year, though. Suck it, Tallman. And that's it.
What is he referring to, Tallman?
You had to throw that in at the end. So congratulations to Nico on winning fantasy football this season for the straight ball in 2024 season. But
thank you.
Second place ain't all that bad too, right? At least I was in the championship game, right? There's a couple people here that can't say that.
Yeah, I got a bone to pick with Matt. Big Matt. Well, two of them.
I felt so bad. I looked at it and I was talking to my wife and I was like, I just knocked Mike out of the
floor. I didn't know that if it would have lost, then Mike wouldn't make the playoffs.
Get out of here. That's the beauty.
He would have beat me in the first round, too. He would have beat me by like five points.
I also blame Chris because Darnell Mooney got him 0 points, and that's how AZ Chris beat him. So, you know.
Hey, I don't want to hear it. You had 13 other weeks to figure it out. Get off my line.
There you go.
Oh, that's funny. But takeaways from this season. Don't make preseason bets because they don't work out. I'm going to establish that now, but then I know come August, it's going to change. And then I'm also supposed to bet Mike on Cam Scataboo's 40-yard dash time at the combine. But yeah, I think I need to reevaluate my preseason expectations. That's it.
Tallman, I'd love to know your splits in regard to wins and losses and bets, but that's for another time.
Yep.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. This year, I think Matt said it perfectly. I think Nico said it perfectly as well. I was on both sides of the spectrum, right? Rome wasn't built in a day. The steps to success are always under construction, whatever kind of hoopla you want to call it in regard to that. The Arizona Cardinals did have a more positive year than last year. How about that? We can say that, right? It was better than last year. They doubled their win total. And I still am frustrated by the way after the bye week went with the NFC West in grasp and guys didn't step up and weren't ready to get it done this year. There's promise. There's hope. We're excited to see how some of these young guys continue to propel in their careers as well, especially Marvin Harrison Jr. I still think he's going to be an absolute stud in this league. So there's things to look forward to with this Arizona Cardinals team. But I will say, gentlemen, as well, perfect bookend way to this season was to check off a bucket list item, which is to meet the man, the myth, the legend, Ron Wolfley at the last Big Red Rage of 2024. What a down-to-earth guy. We also met Roy Lopez, who's an Arizona kid, born and bred. Always love to see those guys having success. But as the 2024 season ends, 2025 just ramps up for us here at Valley Sports Plug. We got a lot of things coming at people. We're excited to add in some new things as well. So make sure you guys are staying in tune with us. But Tallman, Matt, Nico, Chris, always a pleasure. Appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir, Michael. Always a pleasure. Never a chore. We absolutely have some huge things coming in VSP, so make sure you stay tuned. We're going to share more in detail updates with you in the coming weeks. Right now, we're going for consistency. So every Tuesday, you can tune in at 7 p.m. and watch us stream live. We got a whole two-month plan ready for you to roll out. Next week, we are doing a Valley Sports Plug trivia stream. Going to try and do those a little more frequently because they're a lot of fun. Would love for you guys to come hang out and make your guesses as well as we go through that. Man, 2025 is here. Football season's over. Baseball season hasn't started. Hockey doesn't exist in the Valley anymore. And the Suns just lost to the Hornets. man, I find it hard to be optimistic about anything, but I'm not going to go on a rant here at the very end and dampen the mood after so much positivity was just shared. So we'll save that for next time. But thank you all so much for tuning in. Make sure you like and subscribe right here on our YouTube channel, Valley Sports Plug. Also follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, anywhere you have social media. Just look us up. We're more than likely there. And if that's really hard, just go on Google, type in Valley Sports Plug, and you'll see us there. For Michael Benjamin, VSP Tallman, Nico, and Mr. T Jr., I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.